Welcome to The Accredited, presented by 10th Year Seniors here on Guardian Radio 96.9. I'm Ronaldo, and I have been in the Bahamas the last 17 days, so this is not strange to me.
And I'm John Mark, and it's kind of crazy not using the point.
That's true. The whole dynamic has shifted. All right, so we have a lot to talk about. I know y'all missed us last week. We have so much to catch up on. The Bahamian sporting landscape has been very busy. We are going to try to be as concise as possible. The last time we were in, we played the Wheel of Issues where we had a whole bunch of things on the board, and then me and Carter spun the wheel, and then what it landed on was the topic that we were going to talk about.
Was it an actual wheel? Because I wasn't here for that one.
Can't give it away. Theater of the mind. The listeners
have I wasn't here.
The listeners have to believe that there's a wheel.
Let me spin the wheel. Nicaragua.
No, I see. I can't explain to them how the secret sauce is made. But anyway, so as John said, he wasn't there for that. John has not been around for quite a long time. John has been gone for 17 days. And all of that was him traveling with the senior men's national basketball team and their latest international competition. And if you've, unless you've been under a rock, you know that Bahamas basketball right now is taking off. This AmeriCup trip, not included into, I would say, it's not one of our best moments because the expectations have gotten higher.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that. The expectations are there now when you say Bahamas basketball because the average person is not going to take into account who's playing.
Mm-hmm.
They just take into account the brand. Mm-hmm. So you have Bahamas basketball in AmeriCup. We end up going winless, but I want to get it from the person on the ground. Just you looking back at this tournament and this experience, what was your biggest takeaway from this?
My biggest takeaway is, you said exactly, Bahamas basketball is a brand. And it's a brand that's respected among the region. Because just the backstory, our original plan for Bahamas basketball was to get there on August 19th.
Yeah.
Right
before the tournament.
Have like 2 days of practice, yeah. 3 days of practice, because we played on not the first day of the tournament, but the second day. So we went out of extra practice session.
And that's kind of typically what's done.
Yeah, so it would have been the windows. But through the connections of just FIBA and the basketball world that I'm starting to develop a lot of relationships, Nicaragua wanted to play some friendlies and offered to take care of a lot of costs for us to be able to then have those scrimmages in the home country, practice in the gym. So that's why we were there so early. We were there early because there was no plan for a training camp. And within maybe 30 hours, we had a whole training camp set up with two scrimmages against Nicaragua. So it was a great experience on the mindset of the respect that we're getting in the region. Like, you know how we always say we aspire to be certain countries? Nicaragua aspires to be like Bahamas basketball.
Crazy.
Crazy.
It's crazy. Say that again. No, that's insane.
It's crazy because you talk to these people and what I feel like they like about Bahamas is we're, even though we have the certain players we have, we can still communicate and we're still people. We still talk to them. They ask us for advice, for help because they're trying to build their program. They're trying to get to a point where they are solidified in the qualifiers. And the president, Cesar, he was just like picking our brains the whole time, especially when DeMarco was down there and LJ was down there for training camp. So their basketball culture is crazy. For a team, the craziest story is we didn't have a full team till the day of the scrimmage.
Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of moving parts.
A lot of moving parts. They flew in. They came from the airport. We beat them by 40.
And this is why Bahamas basketball is a brand. But before we even get into like the scrimmage and the actual everything that happened on the trip moving forward with that, my thing is I want people to understand just the magnitude and the value of that, like the value that the brand has for a country like Nicaragua to say, because we don't even get taken care of like that.
No.
At home.
They had,
for Nicaragua to say, we will pay for you to be there. What was it? 12 extra days? We will pay there,
yeah,
for you to be there.
Your food, your transportation, your
everything.
Hotel.
We're covering all of that because we want Bahamas basketball here that bad.
They know what big biz basketball, they know what sports business is.
There you go. And y'all know when y'all listen to this, y'all know we love to say this every week. This is the mountain that we stand on. We do not understand sports as big business. Nicaragua gets it. our country doesn't even see the team as valued that much for them to foot the bill for something like this.
No.
To host a whole training camp. But another country is doing it because they see it.
First class, and that's all that, like, you could say a lot of stuff that technically a young federation in this spot, right? First class federation, like, probably one of the best federations I've ever dealt with in my life. And we've dealt with a lot of federations, and we dealt with USA, we dealt with Canada. But I don't think anyone was as accommodating as them, because they made sure if you needed something, it was done. It wasn't a, oh, we'll see if we could do. Like I said, I'm on the phone and I'm thinking I'm going to have to negotiate a deal with them. And I said, hey, we're bringing XYZ amount of people. We're going to need this much rooms, and done. Like that, it wasn't even any, it was just done.
Because they were just trying to make it happen.
Exactly.
Because it was that important to make it happen. And I had an opportunity to watch the games, watch the scrimmages, watch the games, obviously. The thing that stood out to me before, like even before tip-off, and I thought, they are playing in an amazing stadium. Gym, like the basketball culture there is different.
So that gym is not a new gym. They renovated the gym. $2.5 million, I think they used to renovate, because they had to add AC. It didn't used to have AC. They added the four new locker rooms. So every locker room adjacent to the locker room is a coaching room. So you could have, and those locker rooms were like the size of the ones we have at Kendall, each one. So you had four of those with a coaching room adjacent to it. You had your first aid room, your doping room. Like, it was just.
And we still have the same Kendall Isaacs that we've had since.
Yeah.
I don't
know. 1992?
Who knows when it was? Yeah, mid-90s.
But, yeah, no, the state. And then the court that they have, apparently it was a Final Four court. Maybe Kentucky won a championship on it. I don't know. No.
Don't say that.
But, no, it was a
April 3rd, 2012.
It was a court that they got. They refurbished it, and they brought the court in. They bought it because they said they had to get a great court. The biggest thing with them is they got beat by 40 the first game. And Nicaragua showed in the tournament that they have players and they have hoopers and they could stay in games, yeah, right?
Norm Chad O'Meara.
Yeah. The passion that the fans had there. The first thing I said, I turned to Moses, I said, Moses, if we got beat by 40, no one was showing up to our games to support us. Every basket they made, they cheered. Even when we were doing stuff, they cheered. Like, deep down, Nicaragua was number one. People wanted Nicaragua to win. We were number two in that tournament with the fan support.
Yeah, because the national team was there early, and so you kind of rallied support behind that, right? Because playing against the USA and playing against Brazil, obviously Bahamas is underdogs.
Yeah.
So they felt, and also because they saw Bahamas play twice, they felt like they had some kind of attachment to the players. But that kind of thing you talked about, that cultural indoctrination is. We were talking about this a few weeks ago, but that's the thing there that's missing. Mm-hmm. So how do you fix that? I don't even know what the answer is.
One of the smartest things, because like I said, we sat with them too. The smartest things. So the cheapest ticket to get into the game was like $1.50 equivalent for us.
Right.
$2, right? Courtside seat, the most expensive one, I think it was $5 or $10 for the courtside.
What would we price it at?
A lot more. A lot more. $40 is just getting the candle.
Oh, but you get to sit in the leather seats.
Yeah. But anyways, that was the scrimmage games. I know it was more expensive for the America Cup stuff.
But that's a FIBA call, right?
Yeah. No. That's
still them.
That's them call, because they're already taking care of all the costs. So they get to put the price at whatever they want to. But I'm assuming it was like $10 for the cheapest ticket. And the most expensive, I think, was like $25, $30. Maybe 50 when this quarterfinals and stuff came on. But when we were sitting with them, they said, we want everyone to see it. We want the people to be, we want them to afford it. They said they're competing with a million things going on. But you can now say, for $1.50, I can go into this gym and watch players. And they had Norchad. Norchad only played one of the scrimmages. But at the same time, we had Isaiah Mobley.
Right.
Isaiah Mobley is an NBA player. He's played in the league. And people know who he is. Like, people are stopping him. Like, that's the first player, like, people notice. But then, like I say, even with the Sammies and the Cantwans and the Kinos, people started stopping them on the street to take pictures with them because they've seen them there. So Nicaragua's building the culture and they're building it right. They're making sure that the fans get in.
But it's insane to me, and I gotta keep talking about it because I don't understand the disconnect. Like, I know people always say, like, there's this saying that a prophet's always appreciated away from his hometown, and it's almost like that for our athletes too, because they get so much more love every place else but here. Like, it's happening, and you can't say that these people have a better knowledge of players like Sammy and players like Nato. They don't have a better knowledge than Bahamians have, but it's just not the same. I don't get it.
So we played in Malagalpa, right? City, an hour, supposed to be a 2-hour bus ride. It was like 3.5 because of traffic. Everyone was complaining about the bus ride. My apologies, but stuff has to get done if you want to have people take care of costs. But when we got there, their whole mindset changed. They had people out there dancing when we arrived. You know, they had a big welcome. All the fans, like, I'm just saying, like, that little city was so excited to have everything. It's a 2,000-seat stadium. Pretty much 5,000 people showed up because they wanted to watch the game.
Do you think it's possible for us to get 5,000 Bahamians out to watch our national team play?
No. No.
What do we do? I want to get to the actual games, because I feel like, and it was obvious, even the way FIBA marketed it, this was a star turn for that backcourt. This was a star turn for Franco Miller and Dominic Bridgewater.
Yeah, and you got to throw Garvin in there too, because it's about being steady at a position that we haven't been steady at.
If you look at the roster when we're at our peak, and you got to consider the OQT, us at our peak, you circle point guard as like the hole. Who is going to fill that space there? Because there are times when Buddy had to handle, or EG had to run the offense or something like that. And we always said, well, yeah, that may be the spot that we're missing things. So even when VJ had to come in for a while and spell, who's going to be the person to step up? And I think before you left, we were talking and we said, yeah, since Franco played such a big role with those guys, he is going to have to step up and be the guy here. And he was doing that for the most part.
Oh, for sure. So Dominic and Franco, 100%. In my opinion, have solidified themselves as you cannot have any team without them. That's it and that's all.
And because of that, I felt good for Nato, because there's been so many times he's been on the bubble.
Yeah, and I don't know why. I think it's just different.
There's always politics when it comes into this kind of stuff.
It's always going to be like that. But the biggest thing is we were expecting Kai to be there. We got the call. Kai wasn't coming. And to us, and just so the public knows, we pretty much in a week span lost Tavario, Travis, and we were like, well, we still got Kai. And then Kai.
So think of that. That is three starters, three players that would have been starters on this team. One is an NBA player. Mm-hmm. The other two are veterans of the national team, have played at the highest level in their respective leagues, in the countries where they've played in. So these are players that we're going to figure prominently into this tournament, and just either starters or a six man.
Just gone. But okay. So one thing is, we don't believe in more victories, right? But
because the expectations have gotten too high.
That's what it is. So we played USA. We'll go to the first game, right? Yeah. So we played USA. And when you play USA, you expect them to be these juggernauts. They're just big, bad, and it's USA basketball.
It's the international powerhouse in basketball, right?
They have 300 million. But when we started playing them, we were like, all right, no, we could hoop against them. And that's Nato and Franco and Garvin and Isaiah. They were having hell of a game, right? That's just how it is. Sammy was hitting threes. Keenan was coming in at his age, putting up numbers. That was a game where I think what we need to know as a country is we put the region on notice saying no more, or is it going to be a walkover?
No.
Walkover, especially with the guard play we have, especially with the team that we took. Like, we knew it wasn't the strongest team, but it was a team that played with heart. And 8 of those guys on this team should be in the November window. And then if you add the names that we said, we're going to be competing with everyone.
I think just being back in America put people on notice, because if we haven't been there, any tournament you haven't been in since 95,
yeah,
and you find your way back there, it's like, okay, well, obviously we're playing at a different level.
Also remember, we said it, our group was a group of that. Like, we knew at the end of the day, we absolutely knew Uruguay was the must win that we had to have. We knew that. We absolutely knew that. But you take USA to overtime.
And Franco hit the big shot. Like, yep. he had an incredible game. Franco averaged like what, about 24 points per game this tournament. But he was there for every step of the way. He hit the huge shot, and it was so reminiscent of Heat Spurs Game 6. Bosch getting the rebound and kicking it back out to Ray Allen, because that's what happened. Franco missed the initial three, got it off the rebound, hit the three in the corner, and you send the USA into overtime. And we used to make jokes about screenshotting games against the US. Remember when we were like, okay,
stop the game. Yeah,
we were up two nothing, and that was a big deal. But no, this was legitimately them saying,
We should have won that game. At the end of the day, we should have won that game. There was a couple of mistakes. Every game we played in, even the Brazil game, was a winnable game. Remember, we went into Brazil without Nato.
I was about to say, but to me, that changed everything, because unless you watch how this team play, you don't understand how big of a deal it is to miss your lead ball handler and playmaker.
Yeah.
Like, he changes, and even on the defensive end, he completely changes the complexion of the game.
So you had that, and then Uruguay, we knew Uruguay is tough. The thing we didn't have against Uruguay was the size. Like, everyone in Uruguay is like 6'6", and then you have that guy who's couldn't miss a shot.
They
like,
had stretch threes. He was stretch fours.
He made three. He was 3 for 12, and then he made 6 threes against us. You know,
almost had a triple double.
Yeah. So it's just like, I mean, it's just basketball, but it puts us in a position where we're going into November now with confidence against Canada. We have to play Canada now in November. We have a game here, then we go to Toronto apparently to go play the other game.
Nice.
So,
and this is
World Cup qualifiers coming up. So let's remember our history against Canada in the World Cup qualifiers. Beat by 40, beat by 40, beat by 30, beat by 40. They demolish us. I feel we have a chance to sneak a game against Canada.
And I also think that, I mean, well, people also have to realize that now it's going to be different when you shift back to World Cup qualifiers from America, because trying to get into the World Cup is a bigger deal for all of these countries, all of these nations.
And that's the thing. So another important thing of this tournament is the networking of all the people that you know and you talk to, because a lot of the people on the FIBA Americas board is there. USA Basketball is there. So I saw Jim Tooley, was able to talk to him. Carol was there. I think she's the president of FIBA Americas. If not, she was one. And we started talking about the AmeriCup, and I was just like, my biggest takeaway with the AmeriCup is it meant nothing. And at the end of the day, it means nothing. You just go there, play for pride, and you're just spending money to be in this tournament.
Which is why we should have went after it and won it.
I understand. I would have loved to have gone after it and win it, but then you can understand what the player is saying. Well, what does it give us?
Because they're thinking, look, and this is how you got to think when you become a top tier program, because that's how we're viewed by the world now. Obviously, if Nicaragua is treating us like rock stars, they are thinking the ones that matter is the tournaments and the games for the next 4-year cycle for LA 28.
Yeah.
And this has no bearing on that, is what you're saying.
Yeah. So I was talking to Carol about it, and she was like, she agreed with me. She said it needs to be worth something, even if it's a monetary thing, something, you know what I'm saying? So I brought up the whole thing of the Women's America gave an automatic spot to the World Cup. For a country like us, if you told us America was worth the World Cup,
a
potential World Cup spot, they would all commit to it, because then they would say, we don't have to give up our summers. Then you could start developing the team more. So she actually told me, she went and she was talking to people from FIBA, and they were like, oh, for the men, it doesn't make sense because whoever qualifies is going to send a weak team. And I was
No.
My thing is, if you are able to do it for the women, right? Why can you not do it for the men? Like, it doesn't make sense for you to say it works for women, but it's not going to work for men. Like, yeah, let's just say we won America. Let's say we won it. We brought all our players and we won it. There's no way in hell we're going to be putting trash on the floor because we still have to have that team develop and get that skill set. So then when the World Cup comes, those players are in game shape and know the system.
And also for a small country like ours, we don't have the luxury of having A, B, and C teams. Like we are going to put the best available team that we can get at that time.
And we've always done it.
We have always done that. So here's the thing, right? We're talking about, and I love this, and I feel like this should be your mission in life, or at the very least, your mission for the next 4 years. Make America mean something. And I say that because of this. Where's America Cup in 2029, John?
We can't say yet.
We can't say it. But we have on good authority.
No, we absolutely know where it is.
That America Cup 2029 is going to be in a place very important, very near and dear to 10th year seniors. If you know, you know. And so I feel like this should be the time when...
Oh, you better believe I'm going to recruit the hell out of everyone to play in that.
When America is at the place when the official announcement can be made, I think that should mean more than any other one. That should be the time when it is a qualifier into the World Cup. That should be when we send our best team, and I will be a part of our best team that's going to America.
Well, apparently we need like athletic training now, so I put your name on the list.
Listen to me. Sean, I don't want to go there to work. I do not want to go there to work.
Unfortunately, you have to work and do multiple jobs.
Let me tell you that right now. Or, you know what? I'm taking the same microphone and I'm going to be doing that kind of work that I know I could get done in 2 minutes. You want to take me there to do real work? We go into the place that cannot be named. The home team. We're just going to call it the home team. But so that's a wrap on America. And now, like you preluded to, yes, now we're going to go to World Cup qualifiers, and the World Cup is so very important for LA 2028.
It's what it is it's the start of the Olympic cycle. This is not the start of it. The start of it is November.
And that's the thing. I feel like we have to keep educating people on that, like continuously bring that up, because there are a lot of people that really don't know the difference. And you'll hear people talk, once they hear a national team or they hear Bahamas playing, I got the question in the barbershop, where Buddy and where Aiton? And I got to go through the, they're not available.
That's why they are available, but is it worth it? That's always going to be the question. But starting November, this is the time where you have to support this team. This is the time where you're going to have to come out, watch the games, and follow closely, because I feel we got Jamaica in our group. We got Puerto Rico in our group. Mm-hmm. We got Canada in our group.
Y'all see what Jamaica trying to do. Jamaica trying to do with us.
True. Jamaica got big sponsors behind them. Yeah. Big. Big billionaires.
Shout out Marley Foundation.
Shout out to Jamaica. I mean, respect to them. They got three sets of jerseys and they just start.
And they just start. They got three sets of jerseys for one NBA player.
Yeah.
Look how many we have. We have so many, they all can't be on the floor court at the same time. And they got three sets. Anyway, everything
cool. So I know they've all committed with the DA fundraiser. They raised money for the summer already for them to go. I feel the possibility of us being 6-2 after summer, usually 8 games gets you to the World Cup. Mm-hmm. Being 6-2 is a tremendous possibility. And we'll be knocking on the doorstep to go to the World Cup in Qatar. And because USA is hosting, that means an extra spot in the World Cup opens up to the Americas.
In the region.
Mm-hmm. Meaning wherever the USA goes, it's then the next two teams who go the furthest. And we already showed what we could do to these European teams and these Asian teams in these tournaments. So we get to the knockout stage. We might be dancing for LA a year before, we think.
And that is the big part of it that I think people got to realize right before we get to the half. The important part of this is you do well in this part, you do well in the World Cup or even get to the World Cup, then you don't have to worry about that late qualifying tournament qualification right before the Olympics like we were playing in. Mm. That'll do it for the half. When we get back, we're going to talk a bit more basketball, but at the developmental level, and we're going to talk track and field. We'll be back right after the break. Welcome back to The Accredited here on Guardian Radio 96.9, powered by 10th Year Seniors. I'm Ronaldo, and I am going to inundate you with my fantasy football teams. You're going to hear way too much about them, but it's football season, and that's just what you got to live with.
And I'm John Mark, and I'm still tired from a 17-day trip to Nicaragua.
You had a lot going on.
A lot.
You had a lot going on. I mean, one day, you know, if there's an actual film made about this somehow, somewhere, the story of John Mark the Fixer. Because you know what made me think about this? Did you watch the Cowboys documentary yet? Well, obviously, no, you couldn't because you had too much going on.
I turned
on
the TV on only three times when I was there.
I just realized, yeah.
What's it on, Netflix?
It's on Netflix.
No, I don't have Netflix.
There's no way you were going to see that. But they talk, you know, we were there for it, so we know what the Cowboys of the 90s was getting into, right? But they had a fixer, and they brought on that dude, and he had a brief moment. And as I was watching, I was like, one day when the Bahamas basketball story is being told, that is going to be John. And boy, that really is. But anyway, so we talked about the country's players at the highest level. I want to get into some developmental stuff, because while you were gone, Buddy was here doing his Elite 24 camp that we know he's done for the last 7 years. We know how important that is to grassroots basketball. And if you don't know, what happens is Buddy comes back home for the summer. He does his research or gets people to help him with the research, finds the best 24 players. They have a camp. Sometimes it's 3 days, sometimes it's longer, depending on the schedule. These guys also play AAU basketball in and around the Dallas, Oklahoma area. Buddy funds the whole thing, whatever. Buddy Buckets is becoming a thing, and it's becoming like the gold standard for Bahamian travel basketball. One, because you want to be associated with Buddy. Two, because the level of coaching that he brings with Trey Slate and their whole crew, that's something as a young hooper you want to be a part of. It's like, I mean, that's like a huge accolade on your resume to say you were selected there, right? It's kind of our version of being a McDonald's All-American.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like what Jeff's camp was back in the day when you actually won a skills challenge or a three-point shootout or was like the best defensive player. But you're going to go back, like I said, VJ. First camp ever, and a lot of people can't say that. I've had a camp and my first camp ever produced an NBA player.
And he brought that up too. He brought that up when he was coaching the guys. Look, y'all look at that picture, y'all look at that group. He doesn't have to be the only one, you know, but he did say to them, like, y'all don't know how hard that dude was working.
No, they don't. Like, it's a different mentality. Like, I don't know what it is. We know we're going to touch a lot of buttons here.
Oh, yeah. When it comes to this. All of this is just setting it up.
Yeah, we're going to touch a lot of buttons, but it's the support system that you have, but it's how much you want it, right? Personally, I don't think they realize what. Not realize, but when they think they're the best in the Bahamas, they think they're like superstar, and it's supposed to mean something.
And it doesn't. And I think, so obviously, Buddy was the one who was the loudest and the most vocal about that. Like, Trey backed him up on a whole lot of the stuff and the other coaches there, but Buddy had to be the one to say it repeatedly. Because I was sitting in the sessions with them, and the thing that he kept impressing on them is, look, y'all could be as athletic as y'all want. Y'all could be able to jump out of the gym. Y'all could be able to run up and down this court faster than everybody else. If you don't understand concepts, if you don't learn the mental side of basketball, if you can't do any of that stuff, you are not going to succeed in America. Like, he would be stopping drills because they didn't get it. He was like, you cannot play at the next level. And he said several times, what y'all doing in the Bahamas? Like, no disrespect to y'all coaches and stuff like that, but it's not getting you ready for the next level.
It's not translating. No. But it just doesn't, it's not just that. It doesn't even translate to playing professional basketball, college basketball, any type of basketball.
Anywhere outside of here.
Yeah.
Anywhere outside, again, not to disparage it, anything outside of playing like night league here is not going to translate to that. And so that was his biggest thing. Like, it's not, and this is something he said that was very important. He said, you know, I could score more in the NBA. I could do that. But he said, you know what? I am having a longer career because I found my role, and being a team first guy and doing the things that the team needs to win is what is going to keep me around and keep getting me contracts.
Then that's the whole thing. You realize Buddy's going to be getting paid for the next 8 years.
And how, the thing is, how do you get 14, 15, 16-year-old to understand that when their whole thing is running up and down, just trying to score the most?
Layup.
That's it. That's it.
Boy, they could dunk.
Like, though. they stopped the drill because Buddy said, ain't none of y'all hitting no jump shots. All y'all just trying to do is dunk and layup in the drill. Nobody hitting jump shots. But his biggest thing was, and this is what we're going to get to. His biggest thing was, you know what? It's partially y'all, but we got to blame who's teaching the game.
Yeah.
You got to blame, to a large extent, the way the game is being coached here. What is valued here in terms of winning? Because like he said, and he said when he went to Sunrise, he was pretty much 2 years behind in terms of knowing terminology, knowing the intricacies of the game, because basketball is so much, just simple things, things that seem really simple and mundane. We don't get, we have track meet basketball. Just mm-hmm. We ain't running systems. Hard to the rim, that's it. Maybe kick it out for a jump shot there.
See, it's two things. One, the players just want, and I know we could be a fault to it too, because we give them the little highlights and no, I just mess around with that. But coaches here care too much about a championship as opposed to saying, let me get a system, a right system, and be like, let's get these guys off. Because it's always, and I've heard it many times, and it's like a bunch of coaches. People are interested in this kid. He's 14. Oh no, we got to keep him here an extra year. And it's like, why are we keeping these people here an extra year when they can go off and start learning what they need to learn from then?
I was having a couple of conversations with coaches, I ain't gonna call the names, during that, because it was a coach's clinic, because Buddy wanted the coaches to see the way he was teaching the game, to see the way Trey was teaching the game, because he wanted that knowledge not just to go to the players, but to go to the coaches. And we were having conversations on the side, and that kind of thing came up. You had too many guys that wanted players to stay until 18, 19, and the best they could do, again, not to disparage JUCO, but that's the highest level that they could get to.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with going the JUCO route. Absolutely nothing wrong. But it's absolutely wrong when a kid is Division I talent and could be playing Division I from the jump.
And that's the thing. That shouldn't be the ceiling for everyone. Like, everyone has a different path. Some JUCO is a great route for some people, but that cannot be the only path and the only thing that your program's producing.
And you really got to think about it now, right? So if you're a parent, think about this if you're a parent and listen to this clearly. If you have a kid and someone is interested in that kid to get them off the proper way to go play basketball in the States, and a coach here says, no, they should stay here.
Run for the hills.
You are now messing with your money, because there's this thing with NIL and they pay these kids to play college basketball now. So you're trying to tell me you're giving up the opportunity now to send them off to get a D1 scholarship. And let's just say he's a top 300 recruit. That is at least six figures that he will make going to college, minimum.
Minimum. So minimum.
Now, it's not that, do I need a Hugh Campbell? Do I need Jewish people to say it? Now you're actually messing with money.
So, like, let's use Javez as an example, right? Javez Colby. It was clear at 13, at 14, he should be gone.
Of course.
So if any coach said, hey, I need him to stay around to see what he's going to do next, or to see what my program is going to do next, that is doing an injustice. That is doing a disservice.
Of course.
You have to look at it that way. And so after...
Look at him now.
And this is what I'm saying. So now, anyway, you're going to hear a lot of things from him very soon, because in basketball, these things happen really, really quickly. So
but look at CJ.
Yeah.
Like Chris Brown was one of those that he went off. He had an injury, but then he's a top 300 recruit.
He's going to have his choice of wherever University he wants
of Houston offered him.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't no small time school. This is
they
something.
They just came off a championship berth.
Yeah. And it's not going to be a disrespect. I'm not trying to disrespect schools, but if he went to C.I. Gibson, he would not have this opportunity to be able to now say, I am a $500,000 NIL player to go to your school.
Yeah, and so, and to get to that point, right? So Buddy did an interview right after, because the first thing he does, of course, he goes home and he does the back to school give back. And that's before he does that. Then he comes here and he does the Elite 24 camp. So there it's more about the community effort and all of that kind of stuff. But they talked about Elite 24 and he talked about the reason for actually turning it into a coach's clinic this time. And he said the way the game is being taught in the Bahamas, and he was speaking from personal experience. That's why I say you got to feel when Buddy says it, because he's not guessing. Mm-mm. He's talking about what he lived through. And I'm sure what all of the other Bahamian players lived through, because they talk and they all know. But anyway, he said the way the game is being taught is not preparing our players for the next level. We go there and we're behind. Not in terms of athleticism or what we can do on the court, but we don't know the game. So you got to start at that level, the way the game is being taught. And I'm talking about like from the youngest level all the way up. So by the time you get to high school, it's not that heavy of a lift. People took offense to that.
And why? Look at what the national team has right now, right? Franco. Franco's the only one you could say was here the longest because he had the visas denied. But he still went to prep school. But he had Buddy around him pretty much his whole career.
Nado
was gone at 16, 17 to Europe.
First Bahamian player to go straight from high school to the pros.
Garvin was in Ohio. You know,
was Sammy, a D1 player at Akron.
Sammy was in Canada, right? During high school. Kentwan was another one of those kids who was gone in high school. So you look at those kids and look at the players who played and then look at the players who didn't play on that roster, right? You tell me what the ones who played have over the ones who didn't play. They develop their basketball skills at a younger age in a proper system.
And I feel like it's simple math, and no coach should take this as, look, this is a team sport. Basketball is a team sport. We do not have the infrastructure to be elite at the team level here in the Bahamas. One, we don't play enough games. Two, the competition level is not high enough across the board. Those are just basic truths that you have to understand.
Another thing is, people got to realize when there's a million AAU tournaments, when they're coming and winning their trophy with this AAU thing, some of those tournaments are, no one is playing in them.
Just like, do your research.
Yeah. It's just like the biggest AAU circus is Adidas, Nike.
If you don't have a shoe company sponsoring the circuit, it ain't featuring the top players in America out there. But again, that is not for everybody. So circle back to what Buddy was saying. And I was privy to some conversations that kind of shocked me, because I thought people would be in agreement with that across the board. Buddy wasn't saying that there are no good coaches there. What he's saying that, listen, I was coached by good coaches, but I still was not ready for that level. So I'll even take it for us. So I'll speak personally from my perspective, right? So I learned sports performance coaching because I knew Kaizen was going to need that. And I knew his friends who I help along the way and the kids that I coach at iElite, I know all of them are going to need that, right? I am not on the level of Brian Clark. I'm not on the level of Ian Myers, guys that do this at that point. So if they were to say, hey, let them come here, let them learn from me, I would say 100%.
Well, let me teach you what I do.
Let me teach you what I do and then take it to them. Of course, because that's how this thing is supposed to go. I wouldn't say, how dare you come in and say there's something wrong with the program that we run in here or this could improve.
I
don't even understand how people would do that.
You realize people see these players in the NBA and professional and it's like, yeah, they got there because of us.
but John, if Buddy Hield can't say this, who are we going to listen to? This is a 9-year NBA veteran that has done some unbelievable things in basketball. He literally put the Bahamas on his back.
He played in Georgia's gym, but they do that.
He was the best college player.
You know how tough they made him?
I was dumbfounded listening to this because I'm like, and it's not.
You would be dumbfounded with the stuff Bahamians will say, because it's like, they cannot take constructive criticism at all. It's like, no one's perfect. If you were, like, I'll be honest, if you were that good of a coach, you wouldn't be here.
But if this is, if we all agree, and universal truth, America is a basketball powerhouse.
Yeah.
America is better at basketball than everyone in the world, from grassroots level all the way to the pros. This is their thing. So why wouldn't you want to follow in the patterns of the people that know this? There's a reason all the baseball players go to the Dominican Republic, because that has become their thing. Everyone goes there, even Americans. Basketball is like that for America. So why would you take offense to learning concepts, to thinking about the game at a different level, for getting players better prepared? And it may go back to exactly what you say, because if you keep people ignorant, then you can get them to stay. But the more knowledge they get, then they have access to everything. And that means leaving earlier.
Yeah, no. And I'll go back to say what I said earlier. All these people who leave early, 9 times out of 10, at least go Division II. You know, even if they go JUCO, they're further along in JUCO. Because another big thing people forget about is the grades here.
Being able to qualify academically, does our system align with what you need for the NCAA? And it doesn't always do that all the time.
No.
It doesn't always do that. So we're not prepared on that level. And that's another reason why going to high school in the States, because you could get that done in a summer and a half.
But this is why you always got to commend Buddy too, because he comes down here to try to help. And you have the stupid people here who are going to be like, no, no, no. And it's like, that's the problem with our culture. It's like they feel like they do everything right. And then they push out the people who are actually coming to help and change, make the change. And then you're never going to have that change, because until these old people finally kick the bucket. I mean, that's how it's going to be, is when you're going to get the change. But then they try to put their system into these other coaches. And it's just like, yo, our coaching tree is terrible.
Yo, and that was my, and shout out to all the coaches that were actually there trying to learn. But my thing is, if this is someone that has done it at the higher level, because he could be doing anything with his offseason, bro. He could just be in.
He could have been in America.
He could have been in America. He could have been in Greece. He could have been anywhere in the world, but he chose to be there, bring people down and mm-hmm. do that.
Spend his own money.
I don't get it. And this is somebody who, he puts his money where his mouth is, because he don't have to do buddy buckets, bro. He don't have to bring them to his home gym and have them train in there. He doesn't have to do any of that stuff. I don't understand how people don't take full advantage of this and recognize it for what it is, constructive criticism. And so I heard JJ do an interview with Roz. I can't even pronounce her last name. But anyway, I heard her do an interview on the Goodfellow podcast. And one of the things she said about when she's done playing is she says she wants to come home and really push this academy thing. Obviously for basketball, because that's her passion, but she wants to do it for all sports, because there's so much untapped potential in the Bahamas. And I listened to her say that and I was like, you in for such an uphill battle.
That's the problem.
You got to fight through so much.
Red tape, this, that. People want to have certain positions. They want the ownership so they could pat themselves and say, oh, this is mine. Like, this is the reason why people don't come home and do anything. This is why you lose all the talent for the people who actually want to. Like, you know how much people try to come home to do something? And then it's just like, nah, you got to make $1,000 a month. And you're not going to have a livable wage. Well, we have all this money. And even though you're more qualified than everyone, we're going to tell you no.
I don't think we realize how much the game changed. And of course, I feel like we got to turn this into a drinking game. Whenever we say this, people got to take a shot. We don't understand sports as big business.
No, we don't.
That's a big part of that mindset, because I think there are so many people that still long for the days when there would be some volunteer coach in the neighborhood and he's just doing it for the love of the game and the love of the kids. Yeah, there's still some of that, but this is an actual business. This is people's livelihood.
I think there are 3 countries in America that didn't have like sponsors on the jerseys. USA was one. I don't know if it was Brazil, but there was another country that was another one. And then us. And it's just like, come on now. USA got Nike. The other.
I was about to say, look at the other 2 countries.
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, we're supposed to get in the track, but I don't think we're going to have time to get in the track.
We're just going to keep going with this, because there's a lot to get into with this. So I don't know where that mindset comes from. And my hope is that the younger generation of coaches, because there has been a shift recently, I need the younger generation of coaches to change that. I always say, I feel like it's great to, and there are different tiers for everybody, you know, because it is great for you to do things locally. And look, not everybody who plays high school basketball is obviously going to go on and go to college. So you need the ones that's just going to focus on the ones here. That's all fine and good. But like you said, for that elite, for that special crew, I feel like Your measurement should be how many of them you send to higher education.
Yeah, and don't look at VJ and be like, oh yeah, this VJ is a special case.
But also had to leave.
Yeah, he had to leave.
That was JJ's point. She was like, she remembered what it was like having to, and you, even Tum Tum was telling this story too. They all of them had to tell the story. I had to leave at 13 or 14 yep. or 15, and you had to miss so much of your childhood and sacrifice so much to get to that point. And her thing was, I want to change that. I want them to be able to stay. I want them to be able to have all of those family moments that I missed and yet still be able to do this.
Because at 13, 14, you're pretty much saying you got to grow up and figure it out.
You have to. You have to. But they're placed in that position because the infrastructure is not here. So you have people who have gone out. We see how things are done better. We want to recreate that, bring that model here. And they're going to get resistance.
What were you doing at 14? Yeah.
You should ask me that on the podcast, not on the radio.
Like,
but man. Nothing. I say this to guys all the time. I can't even identify with you as a 15-year-old because you've done things at 15 that I had no. He was on a senior national team at 15. I couldn't fathom any of that kind of stuff like that.
At 15, senior national team, it's like, you trying to tell me we couldn't have another catcher older than him?
But when I heard JJ say that, I think about that generation of baseball players that left, saw how things were done, and mm-hmm. say, hey, we could do this back home. Wait, the Dominicans are doing this. They just have academies. Recreate this same thing back home.
Plenty kudos.
Follow that same model, and that turned people into millionaires.
Yeah,
that created Jazz.
And then look at all the kudos that people have.
Plenty kudos.
Plenty.
That made so many teenagers millionaires. But I don't know. Unless we change the mindset, unless we really hone in and focus on who the good of,
you mean big business?
All of this stuff is for, then we're just going to be stuck on the hamster wheel going around and around. That's it, guys. Oh, Carter was in here. Y'all will hear from him next week.